everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the science behind the 6 days of creation when we come back. You know, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1 verse 7 that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full, and unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. Well, every year the continents and islands of this earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. In fact, it's more than 286,000 cubic miles of water flowing into the oceans every year. Now, for century after century, millennium after millennium, this has been going on. And you know, the sea has not increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is all of that possible? Well, today we call it the cycle or circle of evaporation and precipitation. But the writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic influx of water every year, because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds and then ride back to the head of their toboggan slide and then to begin their journey all over again. Now, in modern science today, meteorology is firmly understood and comprehended. Modern science has now learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. And that's just one more of the many examples of real science in the Scripture. And this is one of the many lessons in the Mosaic Law School that I conduct here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the science behind the 6 days of creation. I remember that science is knowledge. Science is absolute. Science is 2 and 2 is 4. It's not in the realm of 5 or in the neighborhood of 3. It is 2 and 2 is 4. Now, when we deal with the real sciences, we go into the laboratory and we actually demonstrate time and again that this is the way something works. Evolution doesn't work that way. Evolution is called science. Evolution is pure speculation. It's religious philosophy is what it really boils down to. Religious philosophy going under the banner, under the guise of science. It's pseudo-science. It's as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note. It is probably the biggest lie ever perpetrated upon humankind. I mean, bigger than Franklin Roosevelt, bigger than Bill Clinton, bigger than George Bush. Everybody believes it. Everybody's exposed to it. You get it in the public schools. You get it in the National Geographic magazine. You can't go anywhere. You can't read anything or listen to any commentary that doesn't contain evolutionary philosophy in it. It's an anti-God philosophy. It's not only anti-God, it's communistic, pornographic, it centers around the drug culture, it promotes euthanasia, it is an anti-God philosophy, it has permeated the radical feminist movement, It's the foundation of Marxism, abortion, racism, humanism, uniformitarianism, paganism, sexual perversion, and the New Age religions. And they all stem from, they all derive from this basic concept of evolutionary philosophy. Now, you can't talk about Genesis 1 and 2, the creation, without getting into the flood in Genesis 6, 7, 8, and 9. That flood and Genesis 1 and 2 are intertwined because both are the foundation or the fundamentals of catastrophism. Mount St. Helens and its eruption in 1980 is catastrophism. And that tidal wave and earthquake that you just saw here at the end of 2004 is catastrophism. You know, it killed 300,000 people. Krakatoa's explosion in 1883, that's catastrophism. And those catastrophes change the landscape. They kill a lot of people. It involves an event that occurs very rarely, but it's stupendous in its operation. Now, uniformitarianism, on the other hand, is the Colorado River running through the Grand Canyon, and we're asked to believe that all of this material was eroded out of the canyon by that river at the rate of about 1 inch per year. And that was the latest number that I saw. It's 1 inch every 100 years, not an inch a year. It's 1 inch every 100 years. The Grand Canyon is being eroded down by 1 inch. And so you just extrapolate that out for 4 billion years, and there you are. There's your canyon. Now, there's a thing called cavitation. What would explain the rapid erosion of the Grand Canyon? Or, for that matter, any of the canyons around the world, and there's a number of them, Black Canyon in Colorado and Grand Canyon in Arizona. Around the world, there are these huge excavations of massive amounts of earth gouged out of the earth. What causes that? How do you explain that? And the answer is called cavitation. Listen to this. The first chapter of Michael Denton's book, Evolution, A Theory in Crisis, is Genesis Rejected. It shows how young Darwin changed during the Beagle Voyage from "I did not then in the least doubt the strict and literal truth of every word in the Bible" to, after seeing the canyon of the Santa Cruz River in southern Argentina, "no possible action of any flood or flood account thus have modeled the land." It is unlikely that in between these two quotations, Darwin was deceived by Charles Lyell, since Darwin was reading Lyell's Principles of Geology. Was Lyell deceived by Charles Lyell into uniformitarian belief, or did he develop that concept independently of Lyell's Principles of Geology? Well, a sample of deliberate deception by Lyell is brought to our attention by Ian Taylor in his book called In the Minds of Men. On pages 81 through 84, where he traces Lyell's deliberate ignoring of an eyewitness report that the Niagara Canyon was receding at a rate of 3 feet per year. Now, I want to stop here for a moment. Now, I reported that to you, that Niagara River is receding, that the Niagara Falls is a lot of water running over the rock, and it is wearing that rock back at the rate of about 3 feet a year. Now, I reported that to you. Now, all you got to do is go down 3 feet a year, just multiply that out. You know, take your famous Texas Instruments calculator, and you take 3 feet a year, and then just go times 1,000. You know, that's 3,000 feet every millennium. Every 1,000 years, that's 3,000 feet, a little over half a mile. Now, can we go down the river and can we identify where this river first began falling over the cliff? And the answer to that is yes, we can. And if witnessing today has been going on for a period of time, then we can extrapolate that with our famous Texas Instruments calculator, and we can figure out that yes, about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, that river began it's wearing away of that precipice. Now listen to this lie here. He reported that the rate was 1 foot per year, and thus the 7 Mile Canyon took 35,000 years to recede, according to Lyle. For research of this type, he was knighted, and the credibility of Moses was eroded. Subsequently, it was established that the rate had been 4 to 5 feet per year, thus supporting a recent creation model. Now, it has been observed to retreat at the rate of 4 feet a year, 3 feet a year, 5 feet a year, I guess depending upon how soft the rock is as it's wearing its way back. Lyle took a report of 3 feet a year and deliberately lied about it. That's one more of the many examples of lies in evolutionary philosophy. Boys and girls, that is not science. Science is where you go measure how far the river eroded this year back. That's science. That's measurement. That's knowledge. Lying about it is not science. That's propaganda, pure and simple. Just propaganda. And that's the basis of evolution. Propaganda. Now, it seems obvious that Darwin changed from being a catastrophist early in the Beagle experience to becoming a uniformitarian by the time that he saw Condor Cliffs, which are located about 100 miles up the Santa Cruz River. In March of 1990 and March of 1992, I, along with M.E. Clark in 1992, investigated the Santa Cruz drainage system. The exploration included a fixed wing flight up and down the Santa Cruz, 2 motor trips up and down the river, a motorboat trip of about 50 miles up and back to the starting point, a close examination of rock types at Condor Cliffs, evidence of glaciers reaching Condor Cliffs, immense sources for flooding the Santa Cruz, even now, and a helicopter flight over the Merino Glacier, which periodically creates a glacial flood. We also explored a gravel pit at Caliphate and landforms in the valley. We saw and captured on video some large calvings of icebergs from the Merino Glacier, and we hope to see the catastrophic failure of the glacial dam the Merino forms every few years during one of our future trips to Patagonia. Now, many other incidental observations were made. The contacts with local tour guides, teachers, and town officials are all parts of the ideal conditions for future exploration of the place where we believe that Charles Darwin, figuratively speaking, threw his Bible overboard. Now, if Charles Darwin knew about the physical process of cavitation and the sudden large magnitude erosion documented in the 1983 film video Challenge at Glen Canyon Dam, we would have had no problem retaining, or he would have had no problem retaining his belief in a young Earth when he saw Condor Cliffs. This U.S. Bureau of Reclamation record shows that normal colored water was coming out of the 40-foot diameter spillway tunnel at over 100 miles an hour. And when it stopped flowing smoothly, the rate of flow was increased in an attempt to recapture smooth flow. This increased flow rate resulted in a change in the color of the water to the same color as the canyon wall material and a reported Richter 3 earthquake. The report indicated that the flow was immediately reduced and the water cleared. A later inspection revealed a hole had been eroded out that required 62,500 cubic feet of concrete to fill. This volume can be best comprehended by visualizing a basketball court covered by a solid rock 12 feet thick. A case can be made that this material was eroded, and it was eroded out in less than a minute, and possibly in as little as 20 seconds. Now, did you get that, boys and girls? Let me pause here and make my comment. Glen Canyon Dam. The Glen Canyon Reservoir is filling up, and they've got to release the water. Now, they've got turbines, and they generate electricity there. Just in case they can't let enough water out through the turbines generating electricity, they've got a spillway that lets the water out so that it doesn't go over the top of the dam. This spillway is cut through solid rock and it's 40 feet in diameter. So the lake is filling up and they say, well, we've got to let this water out. So they open the gates and they let the water out, and it's running through solid rock. Now, as the lake is getting deeper and deeper and rising faster and faster, somebody realizes, oh my God, we got to let the water out faster. So they do. They open it up and they open it up and open it up. And pretty soon, the water's coming out of this thing at 100 miles an hour. And they're looking at the water and they say, gee, it's kind of colored. I wonder what that means. So they opened it up and then they closed it down. And then they went in and they took a look at what had happened. They noticed that there was a phenomenon there called cavitation. Cavitation is the water eroding the rock. Now, here's the phenomenal part of it. This only went on for 20 seconds. 20 seconds. Now, can you erode 62,000 cubic feet of solid rock with water running over it in 20 seconds? And the answer is yeah. It was actually done. Now, that's science, boys and girls. That's the real world of knowledge. That's not speculation. And it's not lies. It's not where you make an observation and you say, gee, here's the precipice of the falls wearing back at 3 feet a year, so let's report 1 foot so that it will support our theory that the Earth is very old and that uniformitarianism is the rule of geology. Now, that's propaganda, that's lies, that's speculation, that's religion. Has nothing to do with science. Now, it's called science in the Wall Street Journal. That nonsense is called science in the New York Times. When it's reported in the mainstream press, when it's reported in the National Geographic, that's called science. That's not science, that's lies. Propaganda. That's religion. Now, the Glen Canyon Dam experiment, actually it was an accidental experiment. Now, cavitation has been known for a long time. It's just that nobody until Glen Canyon understood the tremendous consequences of large volumes of water spilling through a narrow restriction and how fast solid rock can be eroded with water. But there's more to the story. The shock waves transmitted through fluids from the collapse of cavitation bubbles has been measured at 350,000 pounds per square inch. That was measured at Stanford University. Now, theoretically, it could reach 450,000 pounds per square inch in water, and it is reported that cavitation within liquid have flowing in tubes deep in the earth can cause a pressure of 1,000 kilobars. Now, that's 14,500,000 pounds per square inch. Pause. Let me put you on pause here for a second. One time as a young man, I used to work in a shop. And in this shop, they had a hydraulic press. A hydraulic press. And it was for pushing bearings on and off of shafts. And they have to have very close tolerances. And so you've got a shaft, and let's say that it's 3.5 inches in diameter. So they would take a bearing, which is, oh, maybe a thousandth of an inch smaller than 3.5 inches. I mean, this bearing is actually a little bit smaller. Not much, but just a little bit. You put it on this jack. It's a hydraulic jack using the principle of hydraulics, that is, that liquids don't compress. And you start jacking away. And this thing was air-driven, and you could put pounds per square inch. And it would go up to 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 40,000, 50,000, 60,000. Now, it had a gauge on there that said 80,000 pounds per square inch. I never saw that thing go up to 80,000. I think I run it up to 20,000 pounds driving a bearing onto a shaft one time. 20,000 pounds per square inch. Now listen. Listen to these numbers again. Cavitation. The shock waves that are transmitted through fluids from the collapse of cavitation bubbles has been measured at 350,000 pounds per square inch. So all you mechanics out there that are familiar with a hydraulic press, I mean, they're very impressive. I mean, I've seen the metal actually shaved off of the shaft as the bearing is going down the shaft. I mean, and that's at 20,000 pounds per square inch. I mean, it shaves metal right off the shaft. And it just goes clickety, 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 and I mean, that bearing just goes. Now, I've heard tell, guys have said, you know, if this thing ever gets to a point where it doesn't move anymore and the pressure is running up, you got to stop because it'll explode. The metal just explodes and it'll kill you, they tell me. I don't know, I never did it, but that's what the old-timers would tell me. And we're only talking about 20, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 pounds. Listen, it's measured at 350,000 pounds, and deep inside the earth, where there are tremendous pressures, it can reach as high as 14,500,000 pounds per square inch. Now, what we're leading up here to is the flood. The flood and cavitation. You know, people look at the Grand Canyon and they say, oh my God, no flood could ever erode away that solid rock. Well, listen to the rest of the story, boys and girls. This will blow your socks off. Now, 1,000 kilobars or 14,500,000 PSI, and that may be how diamonds are formed in the rock kimberlite. Now, compare these figures with the 3,500 pounds per square inch that it takes to shatter good normal concrete and about 120,000 pounds per square inch to shatter normal steel. The problems caused by cavitation first became widely apparent during World War I, when the increase in the RPMs of ship propellers to speed up the Atlantic crossings resulted in the destruction of the propellers in just one crossing. Now, these propellers are made out of brass. They're metal. It's soft metal, but it's made out of brass, and it's a whole lot harder than the water around it. Now, you think about this. It's 3,000 miles from New York to England, and then in one crossing, by speeding up the propeller by just one revolution per minute. Is it one a minute or one a second here? Let me look at this again. One RPM, increase in the RPMs of ship propellers. Okay, well, it doesn't say how many, but they increased the RPM of the ship's propellers to a degree that the water, soft water, going around this hard brass propeller wore it out, took the metal right off of it in one crossing. Now, water is a very powerful, I want to emphasize, a very powerful eroding agent, but it gets better. Similar problems have occurred as pressures and volumes have been increased until it is obvious that there is a barrier in fluid dynamics that cannot be safely crossed. The problem apparent at large concrete dams has been solved by entraining positive air bubbles in the flowing water that act as shock absorbers of the shock waves propagated by the violent collapse of the vacuum bubbles. Now, Lars, that's L-A-R-S, Lars Nordstrom, Writing in the May 1988 Nuclear Engineering International suggests that cavitation was responsible for the Chernobyl disaster. The dense liquid coolant was vaporized when the pump load was increased during an experiment, and the loss in cooling capability caused an immediate increase in the reactor temperature, and the result is history. Many other evidences of cavitation damage are included in the book Cavitation by F. Ronald Young. Now, one of the best places to study the effects of floods is at concrete dams, because they experience flood factors and dimensions of the structures, and they're known to 1/4 inch. These structures are under constant observation, and the rates of flow are known, and normally these rates of flow are under control. The conditions experience at the Glen Canyon Dam in 1983 are not unique, as similar events happened at Hoover Dam, Yellowtail, Dvorak in the United States, and Tarbela in India, and Guri in Venezuela, to name just a few dams where this effect of cavitation has been observed and documented. The Aare River in Germany experienced a flood in 1926 that resulted in 41-foot deep erosion in its limestone bed. Now, this kind of documented erosion, compared with the conditions during the year-long historical flood and its aftermath, gives us a legitimate reason to suggest that a capability to turn pre-flood mountains into so much mud and having a tremendous amorphous mass circling the globe as unrestrained tides, and then gradually depositing this mass into our present fossil record geologic column sedimentary layer as the fountains of the deep are stopped and the intensity of all fluid dynamics gradually decreases. Large masses of the crust of the earth would sequentially subside into the exhausted fountains of the deep, forming our present ocean beds. Large-scale erosion would quickly foment present canyons and river systems as the runoff from the continents into the recently lowered ocean beds went on and gradually diminished to near present conditions. All right, that's a lot of verbosity there, but let's take a look at what we're talking about. Remember, I told you about creation in symphony, and it's written and produced by a fellow by the name of Carl Baugh. He's down at the Creation Evidences Museum. It's a 3-tape series. When I bought it, it was about $100. And Carl Baugh goes through this very thing of cavitation, just like he went through this story of Dr. Robert Gentry and the radiometric halos, the polonium-210, polonium-214, and the polonium-218. Dr. Baugh deals in real science. And the creation scientists that appeared at and made their presentations, of which there are 68 of these presentations, at the proceedings of the 1992 Twin Cities Creation Conference, deal in real science. Real science is cavitation. Now, this cavitation is the scientific explanation for the erosion of Glen Canyon and Grand Canyon and all of these Black Canyon and so on. These canyons were eroded just like the cavitation at these various dams have been observed around the world. Water will erode solid rock in seconds when the water comes out at sufficient pressure. When you increase the revolutions in a ship's screw through the water, cavitation occurs, and the cavitation will wear away. It will disintegrate solid metal. And that's how powerful water is. Now, evolutionists don't talk about cavitation, because cavitation does not fit into the evolutionary model. But it fits into the creation model, and it fits into science. It fits into real science. Now remember, at the beginning of this program, I told you a story about the water. 286,000 cubic miles of water a year precipitates out of the clouds, rains down on the earth, and then runs off into the oceans. Can you imagine that amount of water multiplied by many times flowing over the land like it did at Glen Canyon Dam? I mean, we're talking about a worldwide flood. We're not talking about this pablum that you hear about, well, the flood was local. Just sit down and read Genesis 6, 7, and 8 and then ask yourself, does the writer in Genesis 6, 7, and 8 talk about a local flood, or is this a worldwide flood? And the evidence of the worldwide flood is under your feet. It's all around the world. And that's why I'm suggesting that you get this series of tapes by Carl Baugh at the museum. It's called the Creation Evidences Museum of Glen Rose, Texas. Now, they got a phone number, or at least they did. Now, this I picked up in 1995, so it's 10 years old, but let's assume that their phone number hasn't changed. Mine hasn't changed in 30 years, so maybe theirs is the same after 10. The phone number is 214-458-9874. Now, that number again, 214-458-9874. The guy's name is Carl Baugh, B-A-U-G-H, and the tapes are called Creation in Symphony. It'll cost you less than a lot lizard in the back of your truck. Less than a lot lizard will buy those tapes, and it will explain how. There's a section in there on this thing called cavitation. And Baugh is a scientist. Baugh takes you through the scientific model of creation and shows you the science behind it, the documented science, like the story I told you yesterday about Dr. Robert Gentry. How long did it take to create the granite on planet Earth? 0.000164 seconds, scientifically documented. I took you through the science of it, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, boys and girls. And Carl Baugh will take you through 12 hours of that kind of science and show you time after time after time the science in Genesis 1 and 2 and the science in Genesis 6, 7, and 8. Now, I got to give you a reminder here. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. What that means is, and sometimes people ask, what that means, it is not open to the public. This is a private school. It is not open to the public. But it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archive. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. You can download these programs, by the way, off the Internet at 16 and 32-bit quality. And they're all free. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order yours, you can do it right now. Call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or the publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Now, most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember to go to our website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about cavitation today. I said early on in this series that there is science behind the 6 days of creation, and that the science that we see in the Bible is real science. It's demonstrable. It's documented. You can weigh it, taste it, touch it, smell it, feel it, and then reproduce it in your own laboratory, in your own facility. It's not the idle speculation of philosophers who speculate that the Grand Canyon was formed by slow processes over billions of years. The Grand Canyon was formed by rapid processes that occurred in probably a week or 10 days, if that long. It occurred at Glen Canyon Dam in 20 seconds. It excavated 62,000 cubic feet of solid rock in 20 seconds. Now that's science, documented and photographed. You can see it. You can feel it, taste it, touch it, smell it, and duplicate it. And this article is being cited from, it's called Discovering Darwin's Deception, Startling Evidence for a Recent Creation, by Paul M. McKinney. I want to give Mr. McKinney credit for his article. This article, called Startling Evidence for a Recent Creation, Discovering Darwin's Deception, was reported at the Proceedings of the 1992 Twin Cities Creation Conference, sponsored by the Twin Cities Creation Science Association and the Genesis Institute and Northwestern College, and assisted by the Creation Health Foundation. We're reading the article on cavitation. Now, many glacial floods would have occurred during the several centuries after the flood, and many of these floods are still going on and can result in dramatic changes in topography to this day. The most dramatic of these now acknowledged by most geologists are the channeled scablands of eastern Washington State. This dramatic even event cut canyons through solid basalt rock 50 miles long, 2 miles wide, and up to 950 feet deep in just a few days of sustained high discharge. There is at present visible evidence of an ancient lake shore about 1,000 feet above the present city of Missoula, Montana. This lake was formed by a glacial ice cork blocking off the Clark Fork River near the Idaho-Montana border. When this ice dam broke at the mouth of the Clark Fork River, the lake drained at a rate unmatched by any flood known. The maximum rate of flow is estimated to have been 9.5 cubic miles per hour, a rate of 386 million cubic feet a second, or about 10 times the combined flow of all of the rivers of the world combined. Let me back up here. Let me tell you a story. Let me repeat this story again. Up in Montana, near Missoula, Montana, going up here into the Rocky Mountains on the Clark Fork River, a plug developed across the river when the lake that backed up behind it finally breached it and broke through. The water coming down out of those mountains came down at a rate greater than all of the rivers on planet Earth combined. Now, that's done at a time and in a place that we can weigh, taste, touch, see, smell, and evaluate. We're not talking about millions and millions of years ago, billions of years ago, that is sheer idle speculation. There are places where floods have occurred where we are able to take measurements, boys and girls, and then we can compare what we know from science. That's what science is, knowledge, what we can weigh, taste, touch, feel, and smell with our senses and take to the bank, not idle speculation and religious philosophy. That's what evolution is, religious philosophy. Don't forget that. All right, now let's go on. For comparison, the Amazon River flow is 6 million cubic feet a second. Got that? The Amazon River flows 6 million cubic feet a second. The water coming out of this Clark Fork was 386 million. 386 million versus 6 million. Here, take your pen. Take your pencil. Write 386 on your paper. 386. And then put six zeros behind that. Okay? Now that's the flow that came out of that Clark Flow River. Now, above the 386, write 6 million. Now the Amazon River is the biggest river in the world. The Amazon River flows 6 million cubic feet a second. This flood that occurred up in Missoula, Montana, was 386 million cubic feet a second. Now, have you got that number written down on your paper? All right. So keep in mind that for comparison, the Amazon River flows 6 million cubic feet a second. This information about the channeled scab land comes from the 1976 Department of the Interior Geological Survey booklet. And certainly credit is due to Dr. Harlan Bretz for his proposal and lifelong supporting research. Now, there are presently more than 50 ice-dammed lakes in western North America, some of which have had disastrous, catastrophic outbursts, like Telesqua, just east of the Juneau, Alaska ice field, has drained suddenly, almost annually, and in 1958 it released 230 million cubic meters of water. That's 8 million cubic feet, most of it in 2 days. There is now evidence that the North Atlantic Ocean was completely frozen over at one time to 45 degrees latitude, and it is reasonable to expect the same for the southern hemisphere. This condition would have made glacial dams and glacial floods regular events over much of the world. Now, it should be noted that most erosion from present-day floods is not observed because any deep erosion holes formed during the intense phase of a flood are filled in as the sediment eroded from the upstream fills in the hole. The sediment previously eroded from the hole fills other holes that had been eroded further downstream. Now, the Noah flood model proposed in this paper assumes that a pre-flood average earth crust elevation, several miles higher than present average elevation, with vast fountains of the deep supporting much of the crust of the earth, and pre-flood mountains and sea depth of 2,000 or 3,000 feet instead of the present extremes of about 30,000 feet above and below present sea level. Place names mentioned after the flood would be memories of the pre-flood rivers, much the way the Thames River and London, Ontario are memories of the name places in England through 3,000 to 4,000 miles removed. So Ethiopia, Assyria, and Euphrates mentioned in Genesis 2:13 and 14 could have been half a globe away from their present locations, and were named after the flood as a memory of those pre-flood rivers and pre-flood geographies. Now, the opening event of the flood catastrophe that we see recorded in Genesis 7:11 was the breaking up within one day of literally the great deep fountains of the great deep. This event has left its mark as the 50,000-mile-long mid-oceanic ridge. Vast quantities of fluids would have been suddenly released and have eroded. Now it says 50,000 miles. Let me pause. That should read 5,000 miles. Mid-oceanic ridge, vast quantities of fluids would have been suddenly released and have eroded vast quantities of crust as they violently escaped. Now that's what cavitation does. Now picture this. Under the Earth's crust, the crust is riding on water like a ball bearing that is encased in grease inside this sealed ball bearing. A rupture occurs, and this 14 million pounds per square inch suddenly blasts through the solid rock and vaporizes that stuff, just like it did at Glen Canyon Dam, just like we observe through the process of cavitation. Now, you talk about a catastrophic event, boys and girls. Now, there's catastrophe. Now, this pre-flood vapor canopy would have been rapidly precipitated by the particulate matter carried high into the atmosphere, and that moisture, along with the moisture from the recently released fountains of the deep, under high pressure, during the early days of its release, to place it high in the atmosphere would have resulted in the 40 days and 40 nights of rain that is recorded in Genesis 7, verse 12. The continued outflow from the fountains of the deep would not continue to go high into the atmosphere because of reduced pressure, but the support they gave to the crust of the earth before their release would now gradually become an increasing load on top of the crust. And when what used to be a support becomes instead a load, you can expect the unsupported crust to basically go in one direction, and that's down. This model is a variation on the theme first presented by Steno, the father of stratigraphy, in the early 1600s. I'm going to pause right here and make my mark on that paragraph mark. Now, Dr. Carl Baugh has a model of the pre-flood Earth in a cutaway that they go to the core of the Earth, and then they work out based upon what we see in the Bible, what is reported by God in the Bible. They have duplicated, and then they have taken the science that we know can weigh, taste, touch, smell, see, feel, and demonstrate, and has put a creation model together that'll boggle your mind. It's the best explanation in science that I've ever seen. And I went to public school just like you did, and I heard the same crap. I've been reading the National Geographic for the last 50 years. I'm fully familiar with the evolutionary pablum that's been fed to us. Now, if you want to get some real science, this guy Carl Baugh's got it. If you're not interested in it, let it lay. But if you're interested in science, this is a must. And for $100, it's dirt cheap. Even if it was $200, it's dirt cheap. If it was $500, it would be dirt cheap. You can't learn this. You people spend tens of thousands of dollars going to college to get a degree where some guy writes on a piece of paper that you're smart. And you believe this kind of crap? Now, come on, guys. We spend a lot of money going to college to be lied to and to believe fairy tales and philosophies. Now, if you want some real education and real science, it's available for $100. $100 will do more than $10,000 will in college. I mean, if you want to know truth. Now, if you want a job at ExxonMobil, you need the college degree with somebody's signature that says, hey, you're real smart, and you need to answer those questions correctly on Friday's test. I don't deny that. I understand money. I understand jobs and position. But for those of you that want to know, well, what really happened? Karl Baugh is the guy that's got the answer. Now, the reason I recommend this guy Karl Baugh over Kent Hovind, in so far as the actual science is concerned, Hovind has a little different bent. Hovind is an educator. He's a high school teacher. He was a high school teacher, he says, for 17 years, and he was teaching these lies in the textbooks, and so he just went through the textbooks. And Hovind is like an investigative reporter reporting on the lies that have been foisted off upon you. So if you want to know who lied to you and when, there isn't anybody that's got that kind of information that I know of. And his set of tapes is about $100. I think that's what I paid for them. It might be $100 and a quarter or something like that, but they're dirt cheap. Now, you spent thousands of dollars to go to college to be brainwashed and lied to. Would you like to know what the truth of the matter is? And Hovind's got those answers. Hovind will tell you who lied to you, the date that the lie took place, and the source of information that exposed the lie, whether it's Piltdown Man or comparative embryology or. I mean, it just goes on and on. But he doesn't get into the actual science of Genesis 1 and 2. That guy, Karl Baugh, actually gets into the science of it and says, well, here are the pressures. Here are the formulas. Here are the numbers that back it up. And remember, I reported to you earlier that they attacked Hovind and Karl Baugh because of their doctorates. They said, hey, wait a minute. We can't overturn these two guys' science. So let's attack their person. Let's attack their character. Let's identify their lies. They lied about their doctorates. They didn't lie about their doctorates. They have real genuine doctorates from a couple of diploma mills. You can get one too. Thousands of public officials in the government in Washington, D.C. are buying these very same doctorates. If you want to know what the truth is, they're not worth the paper that they're written on. Which is why I'm sure that Jesus of Nazareth never spent any time getting his letters. In fact, there's one scripture in the Bible that says, who is this guy having no letters? Just look up the word letters. I don't have that citation right on the top of my brain here, but just look up the word letters in Strong's Concordance, and it'll take you to I think it's in the book of Luke, where the Pharisees, the scribes and the Pharisees, you know, the educated gentry of their day, said, who is this guy having no letters, having never gone to an approved university or college like we did? Why, he doesn't even have a degree as a doctor of divinity, like all you preachers out there do. I mean, all you preachers have letters after your name. Did you know your boss, Jesus, never had any letters? He never went to college. He was uneducated. He just happened to be the creator of the universe. I think he knew a little something. Just like Henry Ford, I've mentioned him a time or two. I think old Henry Ford knew a little something. So let me give you Kent Hovind's name and address here also, because Dr. Kent Hovind, if he wants to be called doctor, I'm going to call him doctor. I think it's a mistake, but then, you know, he's entitled to his thing in life. Dr. Kent Hovind, Creation Science Evangelism. Now, this guy's religious. He's a Baptist preacher. He goes around to churches and he wants to get you saved. Now, once you get behind that, you can get down to reality. And the reality is, this guy Kent Hovind here knows more about evolutionary chicanery than anybody I've ever heard. care of 29 Cummings Road, Pensacola, Florida, 32503. That's care of 29 Cummings Road, Pensacola, Florida, 32503. They got a phone down there, too. They're modern. They're up to date. They've got email, fax, telephone. The number is 850-479-3466. That's 850-479-3466. And their webpage is dino@drdino.com. So if you went to www.drdino.com, you could probably write him an email at dino@drdino.com. And he's heavy on all kinds of things like dinosaurs and modern up-to-date science. He's just a hell of a good guy. Hell of a good guy. And this Carl Baugh over here is, he's a little dry. He's a little dull and uninteresting. My daughter says, oh, God, do we have to listen to that Carl Baugh? Let's listen to Kent Hovind. And that's because Hovind is more alive. And he's not talking about, you know, formulas and dull, dry science like Carl Baugh does. Now, Carl Baugh is not as dull, dry, and uninteresting as my daughter thinks he is. When you're 17, anybody over 30 is dull, dry, and uninteresting. Actually, Baugh is pretty interesting if you're an adult. I mean, he's just as interesting as any college professor you ever paid your $10,000 a year to get lied to. So, remember Dr. Carl Baugh? That's Creation Evidences Museum, Glen Rose, Texas. That's all you need. Now, got 3 or 4 minutes. Listen to this. Did Darwin deceive after being deceived? Now, once you allow yourself to be deceived, it's almost impossible to keep from passing it on. The rejection of God's word and God's work open up one of the ultimate deceptions, and we believe that Darwin rejected God's word and opens up to the ultimate deception, and we believe that Darwin rejected God's word at Condor Cliffs on the Santa Cruz River on April 26, 1834 in Patagonia, a southern province of Argentina. Had Darwin known about the physical process of cavitation, he could well have retained his belief that every word in the Bible is literally true. As Thomas accepted the invitation of Jesus to reach into his side and discover the hole from the spear and then believe, well, we invite you to place your imagination into the big hole at Glen Canyon Dam and be not faithless, but believing that all of God's words are true. In 1 Corinthians 1:26 through 29, for you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. Not very many scientists are called to this kind of work. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, yea, the things which are not, to bring to naught things that are, and that no flesh should glory in his presence. Now that's the story on cavitation. Let me tell you again, the guy's name is Paul M. McKinney. Now if you'd like a copy of this creation book, it's called The Proceedings of the 1992 Twin Cities Creation Conference. Now, I don't know how often that conference is held, but this book came from Carl Baugh at the Creation Evidences Museum of Glen Rose, Texas. Why don't you ask if they've got any newer updates to this book? I think they probably do. It's a dynamite story, and it's not one story, it's many stories. Remember, Paul M. McKinney, Cavitation, page 202. All right, I'm about out of time. I've got to leave it right here. We'll be back with the final concluding episode in our story that we're dealing with here on the creation, the 6 days of creation, the science behind it, tomorrow night. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.